Welcome to Pop Culture Weekly with Kyle McMahon from iHeartRadio. Your pop culture news, views, reviews, and celebrity interviews on all the movies, TV, music, and pop culture you crave weekly. Here's Kyle McMahon.
Nan, nan, nan. Hello, and welcome to Pop Culture Weekly with Kyle McMahon. I, of course, am Kyle McMahon, and it is an amazing show today because I am once again talking with the legendary worldwide icon Gloria Estefan, as well as the incredible Andy Garcia. It is all about the brand new series, the brand new film, Father of the Bride on HBO Max, which is so good. It's such a great, like, feel-good family movie. I absolutely love it. And, you know, I'm not even a romance fan, and this isn't really like a romance. It's more a comedy that, you know, revolves around a wedding. And I just love it. It's obviously an update of the original book, which the book was a huge success back when it came out. And that book was called Father of the Bride. That came out in 1949. It was written by Edward Streeter. And so anyway, then it was turned into a 1950 comedy film, which starred Spencer Tracy and Joan Bennett and Elizabeth Taylor. That went on to be nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actor and a Best Writing and Screenplay Actor. So Spencer Tracy obviously was the one nominated for it. And then that got a sequel from MGM called Father's Little Dividend, which is where Elizabeth Taylor has a baby. And then that was spun off into a television series, which aired on CBS in 1961. And that lasted for just one season, though. Then, of course, there was a remake of the same name that starred Diane Keaton and Steve Martin as the father of the bride that was released in 1991. That was a huge hit. And then in 1995, the same exact cast returned for Father of the Bride Part 2. Now, of course, that brings us today, up to today, I guess, where Warner Brothers has remade the original film and novel once again, but this time starring a Latino family. And I've got to say, and it's written by Latino, features, you know, a Latino cast. I mean, the representation is awesome. However, it is really good and it has its own take on it. You know, it's not like a direct sequel per se, a direct remake per se. It is more modern, you know, it's more relevant to today, to today's families, to today's people, to today's weddings, to today's families. I might have already said that. It is just great. And Miami takes place in Miami mostly. And Miami is like a character in itself in this film. It's so beautiful. And it really is like a tribute, a love letter to Miami, if you will. And I'm telling you, I love this freaking movie. And for me to say that about a wedding movie, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not a big wedding movie person. I'm not a rom-com fan. This is really not a rom-com. It is a comedy that happens to, you know, take place surrounding the events of a wedding and proposal and all that good stuff. I love this freaking cast. I mean, first of all, Gloria Estefan, okay? Gloria freaking Estefan. Of course, I sat down for an interview with her on a previous episode of Pop Culture Weekly, which you can just look at the show notes and click and you can listen to it. It's like a whole half hour, just me and her sit down. She is an icon. 7-time Grammy Award winner. She has received a Presidential Medal of Freedom, named one of the top 100 greatest artists of all time by Billboard. She sold over 100 million records, making her one of the best-selling artists of all time. She, of course, started out in Miami Sound Machine, and then just, you know, she just exploded. She has done movies and TV series, and she's just Gloria Estefan. I mean, that's all there is to it. And on top of that, she's so nice. I love her so much. I love her so much. She's just so incredible. So I speak with her sitting down with her co-star, Andy Garcia. And Andy Garcia, I mean, wow, here's another powerhouse. Andy has been in The Untouchables and Stand and Deliver, Internal Affairs. Of course, he starred in The Godfather Part 3 with Al Pacino and Diane Keaton. And that role, he got a Best Supporting Actor award nom for. Of course, he starred in Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 12 and Ocean's 13. And Mamma Mia, The Mule. He's just another powerhouse. And I am so honored to talk to him. Not only just talk to him, but talk to him and her, meaning Miss Estefan, together. Like, what? And then after that, I talk with Lola Kirk. So Lola is this incredible artist. And she's hysterically funny, as you'll see. She, of course, starred in Mozart in the Jungle. She was in Gone Girl. And her father, Simon Kirk, just so happens to be in the bands Bad Company and Free. And for you New Yorkers, or LAers too, her mom is Lorraine, who owns Geminola, which, if you don't live in New York and LA, it's like a famous vintage boutique in New York City. So Lola, like I said, incredible artist. And right now she is releasing some new music. We're going to be talking about her brand new LP, Lady for Sale, which has received rave reviews. And it's really cool. It's like a mixture of it's kind of a mixture of 80s country and pop rock. I don't know how to explain it, but she's awesome. One review actually says that the album is immediately iconic and it bridges the gap that once existed between Madonna and the Mandrell sisters. So I love that. So anyway, really awesome show today, and I am so happy that you're here with me. And, you know, I appreciate you, in case you don't know that. I can't tell you enough. I appreciate you listening. I love your messages and your emails and your tweets and your, you know, everything that you do to contact me. I really do appreciate you. You make this show grow. You make these amazing people come and sit and talk to me because you're listening. So thank you for that. All right, having said that, let's get right in to the interviews. First up, Lola Kirk.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Awesome. So, first of all, thank you for speaking with me and welcome. You have such an interesting life. You're in so many projects. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you started out as an actress. Is that right?
That is right.
And then, and I would say from doing what, two albums now?
Yeah, two full-length albums, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I would say, you know, music is also in your blood. And quite literally.
Yes.
So tell me, what got you into all of this?
Oh, my God. I ask myself this every day. I say, why? I started out as wanting to be an actress because I think I just wanted attention. I grew up in a really big family. And I was sent to acting class every Saturday from like 9 a.m. to like 3 p.m. It was just like, I think, a great way to not pay for childcare for my mom. And I had this incredible acting teacher, and she was like, I could be your manager. And like, you know, riches flashed before my eyes. And I was like, I was set on being a child star. It was all I wanted. Because I think also I imagined that all of the bullies would like go away if I were successful. I feel like that's why so many people yearn for a career in the arts, because it's like, well, I'll show them. It's
exactly.
Vengeful.
Right.
So yeah, vengeance was why I became an actress and a love of acting. And I loved old movies. I used to watch like 3 movies a night and eat an entire box of these delightful chocolate cookies that I still to this day go to the movies to eat popcorn. And then when I'm done with the popcorn, I do feel like I should leave.
Are you me?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure you are me. I love Regal, and Regal Cinemas is amazing. And I have their Regal Unlimited Pass, which is like $22 a month or something for all you can watch movies. There are literally times where I have seen everything that I've wanted to see, but I will pick something else just to eat the Regal pizza, which is like probably $9. And I could buy the same thing for $1 at Walmart or something, but it's not made at Regal in a stove. So.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you should, it's like going to dinner or something. Right. There you go. I am a popcorn with milk duds person.
Ooh, okay.
And I live in Nashville, and I don't know if it's Regal or whatever it is that I have been going to. They don't have milk duds. And every time I go, I'm like, damn it, I should have stopped at the gas station on the way, because like, there's really just no... that nothing compares. But anyway, we digress. We digress into something far more interesting than my biography. But anyway, yes, I started acting. I had an unsuccessful career as a child star. I did get flown to a screen test in LA when I was 11 for a movie, and Kristen Stewart got the part. And I remember for years, like, holding a grudge against her. And then when I was like 18, I was like, this is very pointless. She's great. But anyway, then I started working right after college, which was very fortunate as an actress. But during college, I had started playing guitar, and at that point, I could only play about 3 chords, and country music, you know, as they say, is 3 chords and the truth. So right. I was like, perfect. Now I can play about 10 chords, but I know a few strumming patterns. So it creates the illusion that I know more.
There you go.
yeah, but that's my... I guess that's like the strange abridged history of how I became both of those things. And I decided to start making albums. Oh my God, there's a huge wasp in the other room. I'm just looking at it and praying it doesn't come over here.
Yes, please. It gives me anxiety.
I know. Don't worry. It can't come through Zoom yet. They haven't built that technology. But yeah, I started releasing music, and it's been a very strange double life that sometimes I myself struggle to make sense of, but I feel really grateful that I've been able to do both to the extent that I have.
And you made a huge splash with your first starring role in Mozart in the Jungle for Amazon Prime. What a way to like make your big debut.
Yeah, that was crazy, especially because at that time streaming was not a thing. And I have a friend who's a psychic. And when I was 18, I was talking to her, and she said, okay, you're going to be an actress, and your big break, it's going to be something that's not film. And I was like, damn it. And then she was like, it's not TV. And I was like, oh my God, what is this? Is it a commercial? I'm going to be like a commercial actress. Like, okay, fine. But not what I'd had in mind. And then lo and behold, my agent called me and was like, Amazon is doing, the book people are doing this weird thing where now they put things on the computer. and that's how that happened. I think it was like the second or third streaming show.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's insane. And that was 2014 it started, something like that, which isn't like that long ago, but is also forever ago in like the technology world. It's insane that, you know, at that time I think that was Amazon's first like big show, right? Like streaming show,
they had
right?
Transparent, and then one other show like Betas or something, I think it was called. Okay. And we were like the third one. But yes, Transparent was like their flagship show, I feel like.
Right. So you were right in there at the beginning. And again, that seems like, you know, it seems like we've had streaming services forever, but it was only not even 10 years ago. That's nuts.
Yeah. I know. It really is nuts.
And so you did 4 seasons of that.
Yes.
And it was critically acclaimed and loved by everyone that saw it.
By everyone who's a total nerd, yes. I mean, in the best way.
Like, obviously.
It's such an amazing demographic who love that show, because I feel like it was really well loved by people who play classical music.
Right.
which was so cool because I feel like typically people, like, I know that right now the Lakers show that I have a little part on has gotten a lot of backlash from the Lakers themselves. And I'm like, wow, I'm so glad that the classical musicians were like, no, we love the show. And it, a lot of people asked me if I actually played the oboe, which was the instrument my character played. And I was like, no, but thank you. That is the highest compliment. Yeah.
Especially from classical music lovers.
Oh yeah. Yes.
And so you, I think it's also kind of serendipitous that your first kind of big role, or not kind of, your first big role was as a musician.
Yeah, that is weird. I mean, as I was playing a far more accomplished musician than I think I will ever be, just because to be a classical musician, it's like being fluent in, like, you know, a very rare language. Mm-hmm. And something that I think, and that's a skill I believe you really have to start quite young. It's not like, you know, what I did, which was like pick up a ukulele and then slowly start playing guitar and force your friends to listen to you. different trajectory. But it was really incredible to be exposed to completely different kinds of music than I had ever experienced. Like, I mean, as you mentioned, my dad is a musician and he played in rock bands, Free and Bad Company. And we did not listen to classical music in the house. So it was a whole re-education for me.
That's really cool. And then, so now you have this brand new album just out a few months ago, April or something. And I love it.
Oh, thank you.
Of course. I think my favorite song is Pink Sky.
Appreciate that. I like that song.
Yeah, it's such a good, I mean, the whole album's great, but I really think that's my favorite. What is interesting to me is that it is like if you took the 80s and like Stevie Nicks and like Martina McBride or something, and they all made a baby.
Oh my God, thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
Like exactly what we were going for. So I feel very seen right now. Appreciate that.
No, and I mean that in, you know, I mean, it's, I love it. And I love how it's an interesting dichotomy.
You got it.
Yeah, that word. I love how it's an interesting, you know, mixture that, I mean, you really, I could listen to it and be like, this was made in the 80s, but it could also be made today. And obviously it was. And I love that about it. It gives it this kind of timeless esque-ness, if that makes sense, because it's quite clearly influenced with the synths and all, but it also wasn't made then. So you're like, this could kind of fit in wherever. And I love that about it. Was that a conscious thing going into like writing, or did that come about like later on in the process, or how did that work?
Yeah. So I had started writing a lot of the songs on the album before really honing in on what aesthetic I wanted to present them with. And once I got really interested in like the Martina McBrides and Roseanne Cash's of the world, I was like, oh, how do I put these songs into this world? And sometimes that meant restructuring the songs, because you can't just do that with any song. It meant like changing verses and changing choruses, and it was really fun to go in that direction. And then once I had kind of solidified that was the direction I wanted to go into, I was able to write songs that more easily fit into that. But yes, it was very, this record is very much an homage to artists like the Judds and I mean, Martina McBride, as you said, and Pam Tillis, and just like a host of country artists that I feel are both celebrated and also kind of unsung.
Yeah,
at
absolutely.
Least to people in certain parts of the country, because, you know, it might feel very silly to say, well, people don't listen to Martina McBride in Nashville, but, you know, in in New York City where I grew up. I didn't hear, there were only very few country acts that crossed over, Chris Gaines. Sorry, I don't like that. Which was very confusing to me as a small child.
Me and too. Then,
I was like, who is that?
I remember being at, remember Borders Books of Music, which was like the best place ever. So I'm a kid and I'm looking at this cover and I'm like, I'm confused. Like, isn't that Garth Brooks? But why does it say Chris? Like, the whole thing was confusing to me.
It was very confusing. I mean, I guess that's what you can do when you sell that many albums, though. It's just right. Like, I'm going to be me, but slightly not me.
Right. It gave a generation of us identity issues, I think.
It really, no, completely. I mean, yeah, my Instagram is official Chris Gaines. So, you know. actually, it really should be. I should change it.
That would be amazing.
That would be good. But yeah, like, I feel like it was like, Faith Hill and Shania Twain crossed over because they were like super hot, but otherwise, and good. I mean, they're great.
Yeah, yeah.
But otherwise, you didn't hear about it. So I don't know. I wanted to share my own discovery, which might be completely redundant to some, but I think has been cool to others.
And I mean, it totally works. I absolutely love it. And I love, like, there's different influences or it might not even be subconscious, but it reminds me, you know, there are certain little things that remind me, like on Pink Sky. I don't know if it's like a slide guitar or something, but it's like, it gives me this like 80s Fleetwood Mac vibe. Like, you know, the Mirage album by Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, I love Mirage.
Yes.
Oh, like, my God. Mirage is so good.
It could fit right on there. And I love that.
Well, that's so lovely to hear. I have always loved Mirage. I think that's such an odd album of theirs. I love that song, That's All Right, that's on Mirage,
oh, yeah.
Which I think is more, you know, chiller. And then I think Gypsy and all those other fun songs are really get more sonically big. And we were certainly interested in stealing that from them.
and when I say that, not to interrupt, but when I say that, and I don't mean that, I just mean it gives that like vibe, and I love that vibe.
I appreciate that, and I think that to be making art you know, at this point in human history is to, in a way, have to understand where you are in the canon of time. And it always really excites me when people are like referential, because it feels very honest. Like, how could you not be influenced by things? So yes, I love music and want to make music because of music I've loved. And I want to include that into what makes me an artist. And it will be inherently different because, you know, we're all different. So
exactly.
Whatever you make, if you try and sound like this person, you're not really going to sound like that person.
Absolutely. And that, you know, that's why I think that I do love it so much is because it gives me like those vibes, but it's not them. You know what I mean? And nobody,
totally.
And nobody could ever be Fleetwood Mac except for Fleetwood Mac. But to have those like vibes on that song, like I love Fleetwood Mac. And then I have, you know, Lola Kirk, who has this awesome song that I'm, you know, listening to. And I'm like, oh, it's got like that kind of vibe. But like, it's also not them. Because if I wanted to listen to them, I would listen to them. But I'm listening to you. And so you're giving, you know, Lola, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I think that might also be part of like being an actress in a way, like when you're an actress, you know, you can, especially in theater, like those roles exist for hundreds of years and a different actor is going to play them and it will still be the same script, but it will always be a different interpretation. So I think that's exciting to me.
Me too. And it's, you know, excellently executed.
Why, thank you.
Of course. So, you know, the lead single, Better Than Any Drug, that is like a really fun, that's like a bop. And I love how, like, I love the background vocals and, you know, it's just so unique. What was that? And then you know, contrasting, this was the other cool thing about it, contrasting this, like, bop is the lyrics, which is like, Mary Jane makes me sleepy, and Molly makes me free, and, like, you know, I love that contrast there. Tell me about that song, how that came about for you.
So my publisher was, I was sharing all of my work tapes as I was in the process of writing the record with her, and she was like, I really want to pressure you to write a song that you would have loved as a 12-year-old. And I was like, oh my God. And then I wrote that, which I think revealed to me a lot about what I was interested in. Age of very, very precocious. Grew up in New York City. But yeah, it was something that I also loved Madonna.
Who doesn't?
So that was like, yeah, who doesn't? You're crazy if you don't love Madonna.
You really
are. Complicated character, but like just so much to love.
Absolutely.
And, so yeah, I wanted to make a kind of like the Judds meets Madonna song. The guitar line in that bow, bow, nah, 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 or I think that's Steel actually, was taken from, I mean, we the Why Not Me song by the Judds, who were one of my favorite groups. And it wasn't taken, but it was inspired.
Yeah, of course.
They're similar. And then, yeah, I think that I just wanted to write a really straightforward song. And fortunately, you know, I've taken enough drugs to include one in each verse. There's only like four verses.
That's funny because my version would have no verses, just Jesus.
just cheese?
Just Jesus.
Just Jesus. Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful, man.
Hopefully nobody's watching this that knows otherwise. But so you also did some shows, right? You did a tour?
I did. I was just out on the road with L. King, who is a very old friend of mine and you know, a great inspiration, and
she's awesome.
The album. She's so awesome. She's so awesome. It was really fun to kind of get to be exposed to her fan base too, because they're different than like fans I played for in LA and stuff. I mean, it was really cool. They were like much drunker, which I loved, yeah. And like so fun. They were so fun. So I don't know. I think that's also part of the like country demographic, because that's where she's more leading now. It was like, oh, these people are like here to listen and party instead of like listen and judge. Like, right. It didn't feel very judged. It was very freeing. And then I did an album release show in New York at this new venue, Brooklyn Made, which is incredible. And I'm about to go to the UK with my dear friend, Courtney Marie Andrews, who co-wrote the first song on the record, Broken Families. And we're doing a few shows there. And then I go back out in September to do solo headlining stuff in Europe.
How exciting is that?
It's really exciting. Yeah.
And are you like nervous about taking, I mean, obviously now you've done a bunch of shows, but I guess I should be, were you nervous taking like your new baby out? You know what I mean? You have a new album.
Yeah.
Is that like nerve wracking for you?
You know, I have such a great live band, which is kind of incredible because we're a three piece. I have somebody, a drummer, Alex Wong, who triggers all of the tracks from a laptop while playing drums and singing. And then I have Josh Kaler, who plays guitar and then steel and sings. And then me just playing acoustic and singing. And somehow they are talented enough to make up for, I think like each song on the album has like 15 instruments on it.
Wow.
And so they are doing the work of 10 musicians. And that's incredible. So it was just so fun. And opening, I think, also takes a lot of pressure off. Like, you get to play for a packed house. Yeah, sure. They're not really there for you, but they're excited. And your job as an opener is just to like make them more excited.
Yeah.
So if you're up for that challenge, then like, it's great.
Yeah. And I, as you were saying about L. King, I saw her open up for Heart.
Oh my God. Amazing.
Yeah. And you know, like, that's such a good pairing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The two of you. Because you're like in the country space, but also not. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's like a really awesome pairing. That's genius.
Well, I am so happy that it got to happen. It was truly, truly fun. And we got to sing together as well. I mean, we've been friends since we were 10 years old. So it was really, really special.
Yeah, that's so cool. So, and then, you know, you have the shows coming up next, and then you have the solo show starting in the fall, right? Early fall?
Yes.
And how long will that go on for? Do you know yet?
Oh, just a short run. I'm doing like 10 shows in September and 10 shows in June, this coming June. So yeah, it's a short run. And then I did a TV show just now, Three Women, which is based on the book of the same title by Lisa Tadeo. And I imagine that's coming out in the next few months, but that was a really fun show to do as well. So it's been busy. But you know, it's really nice to kind of be back in the space of like just getting to know my own music again. I'm when I go out with Courtney next month, it's just me and a guitar for the most part. And to play the songs from this record, which is so heavily produced, just me and a guitar, has kind of really challenged me to learn much more about my own voice and about playing guitar and about performance. And so I'm really excited to embrace that challenge and just be like, okay, this might suck, but I'm trying.
But doesn't every artist, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, as a performer that you can have the biggest, best band in the world, and there are going to be some times that you suck anyway, you know?
Oh, totally. And, you know, I think sometimes I feel really kind of embarrassed because so much of my growing has to be done in public. And that was my choice. You know, no one forced me to become an actress or a musician or anything like that. It's a weird choice to make for your life. And it has a lot of insecurities kind of built into it. But you know, sometimes I get hung up on like, why did I make this choice to kind of like fail and succeed in public? And then I just think, you know what, just keep trying. It doesn't matter. And no one really cares anymore anyway. I mean, some people do, but there's just so much going on that, you know, you're probably the person that cares the most.
Absolutely. You know, and I think in general, I mean, we all have those haters online, but I think in general, when you're in a room with people who are there to hear music, they are far more accepting of us having a bad song or whatever than we think. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I also think that the haters on, what you just identified of like the difference between the haters online and then people actually in the room. You know, it's sometimes I wonder why everything feels so bad. And then I read the news and I'm like, oh, right, civilization is in decline.
Yeah.
And it didn't, you know, it's been that way for a while. And I do think that art used to really meet civilization and make up for what it lacked. And these days, I'm not so convinced that's the case, but I think that it still certainly could be the case. And I think that piece of being in the room with people and really connecting with people is the antidote to all of that hate that gets spewed online. So it does feel important to go out there and try and maybe fail or maybe reach somebody and impact their life and vice versa.
Absolutely. Lola, I could talk to you forever. And I actually just realized we're like, I went way over time. So I hope I didn't.
No. This has been so fun.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And come back for your next project and we'll talk again.
Okay, great. Take care.
All right. Bye. Thank you. Bye. Isn't she literally hysterically funny? Like, she's so funny. She's so talented. Seriously, as you heard, I just couldn't stop laughing. So Lola is incredible, and you can follow Lola on her website, lolakirkmusic.com, or follow her on Insta or Twitter or whatever, at Lola Kirk. And you're welcome, because she's freaking awesome. All right. Next up, the one and only's The one and onlys? The ones and onlys? The one and only Miss Gloria Estefan and the one and only Mr. Andy Garcia for Father of the Bride.
Great seeing you again, Miss Estefan, and nice meeting you, Mr. Garcia. Thank you for speaking with me.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I absolutely love Father of the Bride. It is so much fun. It's such a great film, and it's a love letter, I feel like, to Miami as well as today. And what I mean by that is, you know, traditions are different today, and a lot of us clash with our families on how to make that work. Both of you have daughters. Did that, you know, influence how you portrayed your character with that kind of clash?
Yes, of course. The women in my life influence me every single day and everything I do, everything, you know, there's a lot of similar dynamics with that have spilled over into the film, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And oddly enough, today is my son's and his wife's 12th anniversary. And we were talking about, he had the wedding in our backyard in Miami in June, and similar to this. And there was a cloud that came over right when they were getting married that looked like all hell was going to break loose. So yes, it did. Mm-hmm. But no, absolutely. I have a daughter as well. And in the movie, though, we've raised our daughters to be very strong women. And now it's biting him in, you know, where, because that strength is bucking his traditional idea of how things should be. And I think that's the new take in this movie about from the traditional.
Yeah, you see the before. History repeats itself. You know, mm-hmm. It's like the behavior is shown. I go, I can't believe it. And you know, the other, your spouse would say, like, you're just like, she's just like you.
Exactly.
You know, she's just like her. And now we have to deal with it. We raised that person. The kids grow up with your example, bad or good, you know, or a mixture of both.
Yeah. And that idea that if you're paying for it, it's your way or the highway. And, you know, that's a big problem in the film with his daughter, with our daughter, Adria. And it explores all those themes. It's great.
You know, it's not a traditional thing, you know, that.
And she asked him to marry her.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
And the other father says, we'll split it. I'll pay for it. Who cares about those old traditions? And my character basically says, I care about it.
Yeah. And I could see both, you know, I could see how it happens with both sides, because on one side you want that tradition, but on the other side, you know, you also want to make it about what we want as a couple, you know? Exactly. So it's a very interesting dynamic. And so finally, for both of you, you've worked together before numerous times. How do you see each other now, you know, today working on Father of the Bride compared to when you were both, you know, a little newer to the scene, if you will?
Well, we're friends, so it was just a wonderful experience and a privilege. And I think our friendship just grew, and I felt very comfortable with Andy as my husband, because, you know, my husband and him are very good friends as well. But
they're very similar.
Yes. Oh my gosh, so similar. Yeah. In so many
ways. I don't speak as fast as he does. But other than that, they're both
musicians.
Yeah, and we both come from the same backstory of Billy, as Ingrid.
Yeah,
we're the first Cuban exile generation that came over in the early 60s, right after Castro took over. So we came to America, like my character says, with that universal story. I slept on the floor. I parked cars. I, you know, put my family through school. I built a career. And our culture did that. And there's a pride in that. That's also, you know, closes you off to other things, you know? So that's where we kind of attack the humor of it all, you know?
But it's so funny, because it's a human experience. Because for Anglos, it's the story of, I walked 20 miles to school when I was a kid in the snow. Like, everything becomes so dramatic, and everything is about the past.
It's a universal theme. We just happened to be, in this case, a Cuban and a Mexican family. But that thematic is a universal theme.
Exactly. And Miami looks great. Miami is so beautiful. It's a beautiful city. I think it really... It was one of the characters in the film.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. I love you both. I love this film. Thank you so much for speaking with me.
We appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Yes. It was a, you know, it was a bucket list item to interview Gloria, and then to have gotten to sit down with her and talk for over a half hour about her latest album. This was last year. Her first album in like a decade, Brazil 305, which, by the way, won a Grammy for Best Contemporary Tropical Album. So congrats to her for that. But, and I, you know what? I totally forgot to even ask her about it. But anyway, to be able to sit with her like that and then, you know, then interview her again for a different project. And she remembered me, like, that really meant a lot. And somebody might have even told her, oh, you're sitting down with Kyle McMahon to be interviewed. But that, I loved it anyway. I mean, like, remembered me or remembered my name from a cue card before she talked to me. Anyway, they're both great people. You can watch Father of the Bride right now, exclusively, the only place you'll ever be able to watch it, HBO Max. Love, 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 love HBO Max. Go watch Father of the Bride right now. All right, that's it for this week. You know, hit me up. Go to podcast.popcultureweekly.com. You know, we have that subsite, which gives you way so much information about each episode and guest and all that good stuff. Love to know what you think about it. You can use the talkback button if you're listening on the iHeartRadio app and send a message, voice message directly to me. Or if you go to podcast.popcultureweekly.com, there's a talkback button there no matter where you're listening. So I'll get it. And you might just hear yourself on here. All right. Until next week, I love you. We out.
Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Weekly. Hear all the latest at popcultureweekly.com.
Rhythm is gonna get you. Rhythm is gonna get you. Rhythm is gonna get you. The rhythm is gonna get you. Tonight. Tonight. Tonight.